Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President about to sign two executive orders on equal pay and the Senate voting on the Paycheck Fairness Act on Tuesday, which is being deemed Equal Pay Day because it represents how many days women have to work into 2014 to catch up with men. We'll discuss the gender wage gap with Heidi Hartman. She is the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research and a research professor at the George Washington University and the author of Still a Man's Labor Market, The Long-Time Earnings Gap, and Equal Pay for Working Families and Survival at the Bottom. Then, with 814 million people eligible to vote in elections underway in India, we'll examine the possibility of Narendra Modi, a right-wing nationalist, becoming the leader of the world's largest democracy. Dr. Sumit Ganguly, the chair of Indian Cultures and Civilizations at Indiana University in Bloomington, joins us to discuss the appeal of the BJP leader Modi, who in an American context could be compared to Ted Cruz or Sarah Palin. And the electorate's disgust with the corruption-plagued dynastic rule of the Gandhi family's Congress Party, which has dominated Indian politics since independence. Then finally, we will speak with Charles Gaddy, a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a former senior advisor to the State Department's policy planning staff. He joins us to discuss the re-election of the right-wing Nationalist Party in Hungary, led by Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who is scornful of Western criticism and is biting the hand that is feeding him, the EU, while cozying up to Vladimir Putin. We will look into Orban's electoral victory and the party even further to his right, Jobbik, which got 1 in 5 Hungarian votes. Joining us now is Heidi Hartman, who is the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research, a scientific research organization that she founded in 1987 to meet the need for women-centered, policy-oriented research. She's also a research professor at the George Washington University and vice chair of the National Council of Women's Organizations and co-editor of the Journal of Women, Politics, and Policy, and a co-author of Still a Man's Labor Market, The Long-Term Earnings Gap, Unnecessary Losses, Costs to Americans of the Lack of Family and Medical Leave, and Equal Pay for Working Families and Survival at the Bottom. Welcome to Background Briefing, Heidi Hartman.
Hello, good to be with you.
And the President is going to sign these two executive orders tomorrow. The Senate is going to be taking up the Paycheck Fairness Act, and Tuesday also represents the day that women have to work, the extra time they have to work, through 2014 to catch up with men. So a big day tomorrow. What, it's sort of falling on deaf ears, isn't it? At least the Senate, they're not going to get anywhere with the House, are they? And how far is the President going to get? Of course, he's with executive orders, that is his right. But give me a sense of how much of a step forward this is.
Well, I do think it's a significant step forward, and I do think the tide is changing. We've come off a period of almost 50 years, really, that since women have really entered the labor force in large numbers, have worked more and more, have gotten more education, have made progress toward equal pay, and that kept happening really from the 60s through the 2000s. But finally, at about 2000, it stopped. And for the last 10 years, we've had very little progress between women and men in terms of narrowing the wage gap or in terms of women for having their own real wages increase. And that lack of progress, I think, is it's starting a whole new kind of round of militancy about this issue. There's a lot more attention being paid to the issue of equal pay in the last few years than there were in the 10 years prior to that, in my view.
Well, wasn't one of the first things that the President did was the Lilly Ledbetter Act? I think that was the first thing he signed, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the first bill he signed. And yes, that was important. But I don't think that was something that the public themselves was aroused about. I think Lilly Ledbetter had done a good job, illustrating the issue. She had worked for many years for Goodyear Rubber. And toward the end of her career, a co-worker passed her anonymously a note telling her what the other department leaders were making, and all the other department leaders were men. They were all earning more than she was. And she just felt, you know, she couldn't let that pass. She would have to sue. And so she brought suit. And the Supreme Court, in all of its, you know, knowledge, whatever, decided that, oh, she might have been discriminated against in the first paycheck, but there was no evidence that the company continued to discriminate. So, as Lily herself puts it, she says, oh, so if the discrimination was old, you can get away with it. But so the Supreme Court ruled that even though she had won her case at several levels below, the Supreme Court said, no, she didn't have a case. And so a law was passed, Lilly Ledbetter Act, which the president signed, and Lilly was there. And it said, well, every paycheck is a new discriminatory paycheck. And that was what happened. And so we have that law. But all that law did was restore what we already had before the Supreme Court made that decision, because up until that time, all the other courts seemed to hold that, yes, that was discrimination. If you were discriminated against in the beginning and that pay rate continued for you, you were still being discriminated against with every paycheck. And it simply restored where we were. So there wasn't really any real progress there. It was just undoing a very unfortunate act of the Supreme Court. But I think since then I've seen a lot more public awareness. Just to give you one example, it's not exactly unequal pay, but when Twitter came out with an IPO, an initial public offering of its stock, there was a lot of commentary that not a single woman on the Twitter board was, there was not a single woman on the Twitter board, not a single member of that board was female. And I feel that a few years ago, that just wouldn't have gotten any news at all. So I think there's a new awareness on the part of the media, a new awareness on the part of women, and certainly, you know, perhaps a new awareness on the part of the White House and the Democrats, if not the Republicans, that this is very important to women, very important to women voters.
And again, I'm speaking with Heidi Hartmann, who's the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research, and she's also a research professor at the George Washington University and vice chair of the National Council of Women's Organizations and co-editor of the Journal of Women, Politics, and Policy. So this has always been a bit of an anomaly, though, hasn't it, Heidi Hartmann, that in the boardrooms of American, corporate America, women are nowhere near. I mean, the glass ceiling is weighing heavily on them. Whereas in the real world, in America, women hold up more than half the world. Just recently, it was revealed that at least, if I recall, 40% of women are the primary breadwinners in American households.
Yes, that's exactly true. And you're very right that there's a disconnect between what's happening, you know, like we say, at the kitchen table and what's happening at the board table. At the kitchen, first of all, women raise a number of children on their own without much help from men. That's about 20-25% of households with children. And then in the households where there are two parents, women are, co-breadwinners or even sometimes the major breadwinner in a fair share of those households. So actually the statistic is about two-thirds of women are co-breadwinners, either single breadwinners or co-breadwinners, meaning they earn a substantial share of the family income, close to 50%, or if not all, when they're single parents. So yes, in the real world, women are very much co-breadwinners. Their earnings are very important to the family standard of living. But in the boardrooms, we're still seeing a large share of firms without a single woman on the board. And even when there is a woman on the board, it's a small number of firms where they have two or three or four women on a board. You know, the board might be 15 or 20 people, but very, very few of them would have anything like half the board members female. Some of the countries have started quotas. They have a quota of 30-35% of boards of directors have to be female.
Well, in Germany, of course, half the board of directors have to be members of unions. So, surprise.
That could be good. I mean, the workers do produce the wealth. That's
right.
Right.
But in terms of Tuesday being called Equal Pay Day, and the point being that it is the day on the year's calendar that marks the approximate extra time the average American woman would need to earn as much as the average man did in the prior year. And according to the federal government, women make an average of 77 cents for every dollar that men earn. So this is there is obviously getting – it's getting some attention because there's been some pushback from conservatives. Sabrina Schaefer, the executive director of the Conservative Independence Women's Forum, said on Monday, "Perpetuating the myth that women are a victim class harms women and makes them feel weak." Well, boo-hoo. I mean, what is that supposed to mean? I mean, you just told us that 40% of the households in this country are that women is the leading breadwinner. 20% the woman is the only breadwinner. I mean, women aren't victims. They're holding up more than their own, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think in that sense women feel weak. I think they do feel like they are the support of the family. And in many families, even when there is a husband and a wife, the wife is sort of the financial center of the family. She's the one doing the family budget, monitoring the income, paying the bills. I mean, yes, some guys do that. My husband does pay the bills, fortunately. For me, because I don't seem able to pay bills in a timely manner, and he does. But very often it's the woman that has those skills and those responsibilities. So I think women would just laugh at the idea that they're the weaker member. It's not so much, that it's because you're the weaker member that you need equal pay. You need equal pay because you're a co-breadwinner and because it's your right to have equal pay. And your family needs the money, and you need the money. So it's not because you're being victimized. I don't know. It's just a funny kind of language that the right wing is trying to perpetrate. You know, it's been a long, long time that conservatives have tried to convince American women that there isn't a wage gap. They come out with this every year around this time. There's no wage gap. It's just a myth. And they haven't been able to convince American women. When you do a survey after survey shows, what is the biggest problem of women on the job? Unequal pay.
Heidi, are you telling me that women in America can do math?
They definitely can. They do a lot of math.
So let's talk a little bit about the Paycheck Fairness Act, which is before the U.S. Senate on Tuesday. Now, obviously, it doesn't have a prayer in the House, but apparently would update equal pay laws by barring all employees, not just federal contractors, from punishing workers who share information about their pay. So that does seem somewhat connected to the Lilly Ledbetter Act. So did the Lilly Ledbetter Act not close that loophole?
That's right. The Lilly Ledbetter Act did not close the loophole of preventing employers from retaliating against those who share equal pay. It's my understanding to this day Lilly Ledbetter does not know who anonymously passed her that information. She still doesn't know. And that's because she said that when she started the job, the very first day they told her if she discussed her pay, she'd be fired. So probably all the other people were told the same thing. So the person who slipped her that information knows that it was against company policy. And there was nothing in the Lilly Ledbetter Act that addressed that. But the Paycheck Fairness Act does address that. It has a section, specifically prohibits employers from penalizing workers who share information about pay.
So, and what's the point of that? What are they trying to do there? Probably to do with workplace morale. But if you're cheating half of your workers, who are women or whatever the percentage would be, I can understand why you're doing that. So, what's the rationale for keeping it all secret?
The rationale on the employer's part for keeping it secret. Well, I think exactly that if some people are being paid less for the same job or for an equally valuable job, it might be a different job, but it might be a job that everyone considers to be require equal skill and has equal value. You don't want people to know about it because the people who get less pay are going to be angry that they're getting less pay, and so you don't want them to find out that they're being underpaid. And that's why very often you're told what Lilly was told, you can't discuss pay, or you sign an agreement saying you won't discuss pay. We did a survey on this. I think we're still the only survey that's been done. It was about 4 years ago. We surveyed 2,700 Americans, at least half of whom were working, and we found that and it was random, you know, national random sample, and we found that 62% of women who work in the private sector said that discussion of pay is strongly discouraged or prohibited at their workplace. So many workplaces are preventing people from sharing pay information, and as you can see in Lily's case, when she found out she was being underpaid, she sued. So of course, the employer.
Well, but it just seems so flagrantly obvious that if you keep people in the dark about how much they're being paid for the same work that the person next to them is getting paid, that they're getting cheated. I mean, it just seems to be obvious that that it's a deliberate and benefit to the employer to be, you know, a license to cheat, if you will. So, in any case,
it is a license to cheat, and that's why this law is trying to take away the license for them to cheat. Right. But, I mean, surprisingly, in the American legal system, they seem to feel they have the right to cheat.
We could discuss that now, but we've run out of time. And tomorrow's a big day, and I imagine you're going to be busy. But we will see whether what happens with the Senate, and certainly the executive orders will have their effect. So I guess you're going to be celebrating tomorrow.
Well, yes, and I'm going to be very hopeful that the executive orders will make a big difference. The more we talk about it, the more shows like this, the more people are aware that they have a right to share, that they have a right to equal pay, you know, the more that cheating will just disappear. And that's my hope, that this will help that cheating disappear. And thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Heidi Hartmann, who's the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research, a scientific research organization that she founded in 1987 to meet the need for women-centered policy-oriented research. She's also a research professor at the George Washington University and the vice chair of the National Council of Women's Organization and co-editor of the Journal of Women, Politics, and Policy. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking about the world's largest democracy, electing somebody who would be akin to Ted Cruz or Sarah Palin.